Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We like to add to our list of Hall of Famers, and Tuesday was an opportunity to catch up with one who was inducted in 2009 and won a Super Bowl in Baltimore.
For the tie, the two-point conversion. Lamar takes the snap, rolls to the right, throws, complete, no!
He dropped it!
Mark Andrews hit him in the hands! And Mark Andrews dropped it as he fell into the end zone.
After Hours tackles the Big Bowl in the Big Easy, all week long on the Infinity Sports Network.
Oh yes, for the voice god, that's what we're doing. We're getting ready for Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. And Rod Woodson, an opportunity to catch up with him on Tuesday. It's a gathering of Hall of Famers, which is cool. They always wear their gold jackets there on Radio Row and around the city. And he had a chance to play in Pittsburgh for many years, but won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. So interesting collection of fan bases there for Rod. I asked him, Rod, what do you remember most from your former Super Bowl experiences and Super Week?
The ultimate goal is to win that Super Bowl, right? So you play that whole year in the hope of getting an opportunity to be the best in the world at playing American football. And it's kind of a blur because when you first come in, you're there the first day, and then they start bringing the families in. And when they start bringing the families in, that's when it kind of goes faster because you are getting pulled from multiple positions in multiple ways. Because family members, maybe people you haven't seen, but then even your close-knit family is still wanting to probably do things. So I think that's a part of it. But I think a bigger part of it is the media obligations that every player has to go through, which, yeah, you got to go through media obligations normally during the week, but it's at a new scale once the Super Bowl gets there because the whole world is watching. And the whole world who really follows American football, they're going to be sending somebody there to talk to players in some capacity. So it's just more in-depth conversations throughout the whole week. You know, I think that was probably the biggest surprise when I first went to my first one in 95. But learning the game itself. So once the game starts, you just say, hey, it's played the same amount of time. It's a longer halftime. The field is the same size. Everything else is the same. The rules are the same. So you just can't get, we call it emotionally hijacked when you're starting to get ready for this thing and get too nervous to go play the big game.
You were later in your career when you won the Super Bowl with the Ravens. What did it mean to you after the years that you had poured into the game to finally be at the pinnacle of your sport?
It's the ultimate goal to win the Super Bowl. And, you know, we had multiple really good teams in Pittsburgh. We can never get over the hump. You know, we went to the one. We lost an AFC championship game to San Diego in 94. We go there in 95. The same year I hurt my knee and blew it out, but I still got to come back and play in my first Super Bowl. I got about 15, 16 plays. So to get to Baltimore and to kind of where we started in 98, to where we finished in 2000 for being the Super Bowl victor, it was a long journey. I think a lot of things happened over that course of time in a 2.5 year period, but it was well worth it because when the confetti is yours, when it falls down and it's yours and you know you've been the best, there's nothing like it.
We're spending a few minutes with Hall of Fame cornerback and Super Bowl 35 champ Rod Woodson. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Very disappointing for the Ravens this year. And the turnovers, I think, would haunt me. But what will you take away from that game? Another season for the Ravens in which they come real close, but just not quite able to get over the hump.
You can't turn the ball over in the postseason. I mean, obviously, it's glaring in any game, even the first game of the year. But once you get to the postseason, you're playing better teams, the best teams in the league. You just can't turn the ball over. And once you have those turnovers, the likelihood of winning decreases. And you know, that's the saddest thing, because when I was going into that week, I'm like, man, these guys have got the best offense in the league by far all year long. Defensively, since the bye week, since week 11, they were just playing at a very high level. I just thought it was their year. And but when you turn the ball over, it's not your year. You just can't, you know, do that and think you're going to win football games, especially when the margin is very narrow, playing against the best teams in the postseason.
Derrick Henry, an incredible addition to that backfield. But how did that change life for Lamar Jackson?
I think we all saw Lamar at a different light. He could still run, right? We saw that when he had to. But Lamar didn't have to be Superman anymore. And I think that's the key. Like, Lamar didn't have to be the leading passer, the leading rusher. He didn't have to do all of it. He handed that ball off to Derrick. And when he wanted to run the ball, yes, he did. But he threw the ball extremely well all year long. He was very good decision-making all year long. Didn't throw a lot of interceptions. Didn't make a lot of bad decisions and making turnovers. Having, you know, over 40 touchdown passes, only had, I think, 4 interceptions during the regular season. I mean, that growth, I still think there's more growth in him because I think he's still learning. Because before Todd Monken came in, Lamar Jackson didn't make checks at the line of scrimmage. Whatever the play was called, it was called. So he has learned over the last couple years under Todd, like, how to read the defenses, how to see it, how to make the adjustments, how to make the checks. So I still think there's growth in Lamar. And, you know, him losing that weight this year to get faster again, it just adds another headache for all defense coordinators in the National Football League. But I still see a lot of great things from Lamar. I don't think the window's closed. I don't think it's closed at all for this football team, because Lamar's so young, and Derrick Henry, I still think he has a lot in his tank. And if the defense can come back the way it finished, this is going to be a very scary team starting the 2025 season.
Another similar story with the Eagles, as they're in New Orleans and they add Saquon Barkley to their backfield. They rediscover this identity. The coaching staff seems to be intact now, or I guess more stable, along with Nick Sirianni. From a defensive perspective, Rod, how in the world do you start to contain that run game or limit Saquon Barkley?
Right. I mean, isn't it funny how when your players play really good, your coaches get better? Isn't that crazy?
Amazing.
But first of all, shame on the Giants for letting a running back like Barkley. You got to think about the top 3 running backs in the National Football League this year played on different teams last year. For some odd reason, NFL coaches or general managers, I'm not really sure who is making those decisions, they don't value running backs that at a high level. But when you have one like a Derrick Henry, you have one like Mr. Barkley and Josh Jacobs, you can't substitute that. The pass game starts with the run game, but Barkley is very Barry Sanders-ish to me when I watch him play, because Barry Sanders is the only running back we ever game plan for, saying we had to do certain things because he was so talented. He has such great vision and he can cut on a dime. And I think Barkley is so much like that. He's not Barry Sanders, but he's so much like that. And his speed, once he gets outside, I think their legs, they both had big legs and all that stuff. They made people miss in space. But adding that dynamic to the Philadelphia Eagles offense, think about the first drive in the championship game when they ran that little toss, broke 2 tackles, and took it, what was that, 65, 70 yards, whatever that was? That is what he has brought to the football team. And when you can run the football and defensively like they are with Vic Fangio, their defensive front, when you can run the football and stop the run, you can win a lot of football games in the National Football League, and you can win the Super Bowl that way.
So then how does Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs defense counter that weapon?
Well, Steve's going to do what he does. I mean, he blitzes about 25% of the time. I think the biggest question is, how does Jalen Hurts handle the pressure that Coach Spagnuolo is going to give him throughout the whole game? That's going to be the question, because if on first and second down, in critical moments, he's coming. Everybody knows it. You know it. I know it. They know it. So the question is, how can they handle? Are they going to have smoke screens, bubble screens? Are they going to quick intermediate passes? You know, are you going to try to get by right behind the blitz to take advantage of that? And if they can do that consistently, if they can do that well, sporadically throughout the game, you kind of like your chances with Philly, just for the fact because their defense plays fast. And when you can run the football, I just don't know if I like Kansas City's defense. I think they've been really, really good throughout the year. I mean, at the beginning of the year, they were outstanding. I think they kind of fell back just a little bit, but I think that's going to be the biggest matchup. If they can't stop Mr. Barkley from running the football, and Jalen Hurts can take advantage of Steve Spagnuolo bringing his blitzes, it can be a nice little day for Philly, kind of taking away that three-peat.
Hall of Fame cornerback and Super Bowl champion Rod Woodson with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence. You know, the Chiefs have this knack for somehow snatching victory from the jaws of defeat. I've said for the last, oh gosh, couple of years, they're the toughest out in sports. What impresses you most about the way that they manage everyone taking their best shot at them?
They are blessed. Whoever decided to draft Patrick Mahomes, genius. He should have won the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, absolutely genius. Think about all the deficiencies they've had all year long. The team masked those. And now you got your speed back. Now you got Brown back, right? Along with Worthy. So you got two speed guys sitting there. You got Hopkins being there. You got one of the top best tight ends in the history of football there. But the key for these guys is 15. When they weren't playing great football on offense, he would make one or two plays every single game and they would win. And defensively, they've been solid throughout the whole year. I think Steve Spagnuolo has done a tremendous job with these guys. And for me, I just think 15 is that guy. He is that guy just as all the negative, any weakness that they did have, he always masked it because he's always found a way to do something right inside of the game. Think about all the different plays, the underhand throws, the flip pass down the field, not like it's a flip pass to a running back, it's a flip pass to the tight end or receiver down the field. Andy Reid allows it. That's what I love about their coaching staff. They allow their players to be themselves inside of their system as long as they don't go rogue. And that, to me, is great coaching. Great coaches can allow their players to be themselves inside of their systems because that's when you're comfortable. When you're comfortable when you're yourself, wherever you might be. And for the players, it's on the playing field. And Andy Reid has done a tremendous job when he was at Philly, but definitely since he's been in Kansas City, of allowing his guys to be themselves when they step on the field.
Rod, I have to tell you a funny story. On Tuesday morning, as I was talking with my producer about our schedule, our interviews during the Super Bowl week, my friend Boomer Esiason, former NFL MVP, was walking by. We see each other every morning. He's starting his show as I'm finishing mine. And he heard me say your name, Rod Woodson. And he said right away, make sure you tell Rod, I think that he is the best defensive back in NFL history because he was good at multiple positions. He wanted me to make sure I pass that message along to you, Rod.
Tell Boomer, I definitely appreciate it, man. Loved playing against him. I thought he was probably the best in my time frame that I played against. He was the best play-action quarterback that I ever played against. A couple times he would duck with the ball, and I couldn't even see him back there. And he's a lot taller than I thought he was, but you couldn't see the guy, and he would throw the ball down the field. So I definitely appreciated the compliment, and he was an outstanding player himself.
I'll make sure I tell him that. Also, I saw recently on your social media, you had a chance to address prospects, potential pro players at the Senior Bowl. What type of wisdom do you share with them when you have the opportunity?
The biggest thing I gave them is that, you know, this gravy train that you want to be on is 105 years old. This is the 105th year for the National Football League as we know it, and they don't need you. And I was being honest, like, they don't need you, but they will take you. They want your talent. They want to hone you. They want you to be inside of it, but they don't need the headaches unless you have your talent level just such a, your production is so high, they'll take you until. And the second biggest thing I told them is that, you know, what's going to differentiate you between all the other guys who play in the National Football League? So you got to work in the dark. You got to work on your craft, and your craft has to be important to you where you take it serious. It's not that you leave, you're the last one in and you're first one out. You should be the first one there and the last one out. And then in the off season, yeah, you got OTAs and all that stuff, but you should still be working to hone your craft and to get your body ready for a long, grueling season. I mean, 17 weeks is a long time in the National Football League. And sooner or later, they're going to put 18 games into it. It's going to be even longer. So they got to make sure that they're doing everything the right way. So I think that was the biggest take for me, was like just trying to hit them with reality and to make sure they can try to find their greatness and be more of a professional than an amateur.
And it's not just the toll that it takes over the course of that year, but also has lasting effects for the rest of your life. And I know you're open about some of the chronic knee pain that you deal with, Rod. How do you manage that now post-playing career?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. It's like when you're young and you're vibrant, you first come into the league, you think you can't get hurt. I'm like a superhero. I can't get hurt. In 89, my second year, third year, going into my third year in the league, I had a chondral defect in my left knee, and then about 5, 6, 7 years later, I tore my ACL, and now I have osteoarthritis in my knees, and you know, that's that lasting effect of playing for 17 years in the league. You really don't know how you want to handle it, but I know one thing I didn't want to do is I didn't want to be on opioids. I didn't want to be on painkillers.
Yes.
I want to be on something that can give me an opportunity to still be myself, but and be around my kids and be around my grandkids, and to still have the life that I would want to have by either walking around playing golf, going swimming, going fishing, whatever it might be. I think that was the biggest thing I was looking forward to. And then obviously I felt a long lasting pain relief that was non-opioid use, and I've been using it ever since. So a company called Pacera has a product inside of their system called Zoretta, and I've been using that for the last 5 years, giving me much relief in my joints and my knees, where I can still walk around and work out and be with my grandkids and walk around the neighborhood with my wife and my dogs. It's been very rewarding. And when I first got done and my knees started hurting, I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do? And one of my really good buddies of mine that I played with introduced me to Zoretta and Pacera, and I've been with them ever since.
Well, if people are interested and want to find out more, how can they do that?
The biggest thing is to go to Pacera.com, and that's P-A-C-I-R-A. com. They have multitude of medicines to use, and I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, it's been a blessing to me and what I wanted to do and what I want to be. Every athlete who gets done playing, we all ask each other, how you feeling? Mm-hmm. How your body feel? And I can honestly say my body feels great because I started using this.
Just having worked in the business for as long as I have, you encounter a lot of pro athletes. They're limping. They're dealing with that pain for the rest of their lives. So the fact that you're able to live a quality life post-playing career is great news. So I'm glad people have an option. They can check this out. Rod, does it ever blow you away when you see the scope and the scale of the NFL these days?
No. I mean, they're a great machine. They have a great product. People love American football. Just think about everything they do is an event, right? I mean,
right.
Back in the day when I came out and we had the combine was in Indy. The very first year, matter of fact, it was in Indy. I was there. And now they sell tickets. It was like a one-day event, two-day event, three-day event, something like that. And now it's like a week-long event, right? So everything is an event for the NFL. They sell events. They don't sell, like an individual event. They sell weeks, like right. blocks. And that's why they've been so popular. You know, it's rare that you get to go see guys work out and train or at least prepare to even go into the draft. They're not even drafted yet. And people are buying tickets to go see those guys at the combine. And I think that's the momentum that the NFL has, and they have captivated that by going around the league, or excuse me, around the world and the different countries to play American football, because almost every country plays American football, and they know that, and they've captivated, I think, all the audiences around the world to have eyes on when the games are played, no matter where they're at.
Well, especially this coming weekend, a game that will have hundreds of millions of people paying attention across the globe. He's a Super Bowl champion, a Hall of Fame cornerback. You can also hear him on Ravens Radio in Baltimore. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes. Enjoy this week.
I definitely appreciate it, and hopefully I'll see you in New Orleans.